Welcome back, everybody, to Constructive Uncoupling, the podcast devoted to amicable divorces. I'm Judy Weigel, your host and amicable divorce expert. Why? Because that's all I do, amicable divorces. Today's episode is tips to overcome divorce misconceptions. There are tons of divorce misconceptions, from who has the power, who has the control, what the judge will say, what the judge won't say, what I'm allowed to have, what I'm not allowed to have. And I want to clarify this because divorce is tough enough with the emotions of uncoupling, to go from being married to single again. And I want to do what I can do to identify some pretty obvious and repetitive divorce misconceptions, and I want to show you how to deal with it. So the A number one divorce misconception is, I'll take you for everything. I'll take you for everything. Parenthetically, if you divorce me. I work in the state of California. Every state has slightly different divorce laws, but there is no state where one spouse can take the other spouse for everything. It just doesn't work like that. So with the nuances of difference in divorce laws, please know that if your spouse is saying to you, I'll take you for everything, that's fear-based, that's a lack of control-based, and it means nothing. And so here's how to deal with it. Just simply say, I hear you. I understand this is what you would like to do. Why don't we go get legal advice and let's see what we can and cannot do. Now, with that statement, you've just nullified all the emotion. You haven't argued. You haven't said, how can you say this? How can you want to do this to me? I can't believe it with everything I've done for you. No, don't even go there. That's just pitting emotion against emotion. Here's what you do. Again, you nullify the emotion. You just let the statement be what the statement is. Know that even if you haven't received attorney advice yet, that there's no way anybody is going to take you for anything. And know that that will change once you introduce legal professionals into the process. Number two, and this is about children, and there's two parts to it. The first statement, you'll never see the kids again. I'll make sure you never see the kids again. Well, unless your partner wants to engage in child abduction and literally take the kids and vanish with them, again, fear-based, control-based. Every state has different laws for child custody. But in any state, the court, the state, wants both parents to have the best relationships with their children that they can. Both parents should have as much exposure to the children as they can. And with that comes a lot of different considerations. What are the children's schedules? What are the parents' schedules? Is each parent able to take the children? You know, are they able to cook? Are they able to pick the children up, take the children to school? I mean, there's just so many aspects to spending time with the children as possible. And that's the co-parenting schedule. But with the custody, you know, there's joint custody, there's sole custody. And when you file petitions and responses, you each request what you would like. And then you have to work things out. If you can do a non-court appearance divorce like the ones I specialize in, we will mediate and we will then go to joint versus sole custody. And then we'll deal with the co-parenting plan. But there's no such thing as you'll never see the kids again. It really doesn't happen. And then the part two of this is, the person, the parent who has been spending more time with the children than the other parent, probably due to discussion on roles, one parent will cook, give the children lunches, get them up, get them dressed, pick them up from school, do their homework, take them to all the class, you know, other than school classes, the art things, the sports activities. So a lot of times one parent is designated to do that, or just by default is the parent who does that. But when there's a divorce, things kind of change. So when the parent who has been spending most of the time with the children turns to me and says, I can't believe that a judge would allow my spouse to have an equal amount of time in the co-parenting schedule as me, here's my answer for a California-based divorce. Well, nobody knows what a judge will decide until you're in front of the judge and you tell your stories. But if you want to keep this as an out-of-court divorce, here's what you do. You look at the child's schedule and you look at the parent's schedule and you try and match up how everything that your child needs gets done. And while the schedule allows you to work and earn a living. So in a California divorce, best interest of the child is the key phrase that everybody goes to. Of course, it's slightly different with each child, but the court wants to have both parents involved as much as possible in a co-parenting schedule for this reason. When everybody's living in the same house, even though one parent may spend more time with the children than the other parent, at least you know the other parent's there. The other parent may come home late, leave early, but at least the energy of the other parent is there. And so the other parent can be involved and the children can go to the other parent when the other parent's around. But when there are two households, that energy isn't there anymore. And so this is why the court would like to have a schedule amicably worked out between the parents, where the children can spend as much time as possible with each parent. And let me tell you, I'm talking to the parent now that does spend more time with their children. The parent who doesn't will default back to less time. I've never seen it fail. You have to allow the parent the exposure to the children, the exposure to the schedule, the opportunity to do the best they can. But what happens quite often is the parent who does not spend an equal amount of time with the children in the house, they're really not set up to spend that much time with the children unless they're a very, very nurturing parent. And I've seen that. There are men who are extremely nurturing. There are women who aren't nurturing. So each case is individual, but you have to keep talking about the best interest of the child and look at the logistics of your child's schedule and your schedules and how you both have to earn money so that you can both keep yourselves in good standing financially and be able to take care of yourselves and the children. It's a conversation. Do not let fear get the best of you. Now let me go to the house. And there are several aspects of the house that get to be very contentious, and there are misconceptions about this. So one of them, this was my house before we got married, and it doesn't matter if you contributed to it. You don't get to have any equity in it. Please see a lawyer. Again, every state is different. But and I can only speak from a California divorce, and that is houses become community property when certain things come into place. Regardless of whether you're on the title to the house or the mortgage, and these are the other two aspects, either you haven't contributed so you can't have any equity, or your name isn't on the mortgage and your name isn't on the title. Therefore, you cannot enjoy any asset value to the house. For the most part, it's an untrue statement. You have to go to an attorney and you must talk about this. You must look at the laws in your state and you have to ask the attorney things like, does my name have to be on the title in order for me to have some equity value, at least for the time I lived in the house from date of marriage to date of separation. These are very important aspects to looking at equity value in your house. Date of marriage to date of separation. How long did both of you live in the house as a married couple? Very key as a married couple. Why aren't both people's names on the title? That's an easier question to ask than why aren't both people's names on the mortgage? If you're not on the mortgage, you generally can't qualify. It doesn't matter what state you're in. If you're not on the title, this is very interesting, and I've learned to really listen to people and ask questions. Sometimes people's names aren't on the title because it's about the business that's owned by that individual who's not on the title. Sometimes that individual can't be on the title because they have a business and for a number of different reasons, they can't appear on this other asset. So there's all these different reasons that people forget why they're not on title. Because normally when you get married, the titles are changed to both people's names. So before you react in fear, look at why your name isn't on the title if it's not. Remember why your name isn't on the mortgage if it's not. And if this was a separate piece of property before the marriage and you were needed, the other spouse, to be on the title and be on the mortgage, well, then you have just created, more than likely, community property. But again, you must ask an attorney in your state about the laws of having the house be an equitable division of an asset. Your attorneys will set you straight. So again, your response to your spouse would be, I understand your position. I know this is a large asset and you want to protect it. Let's talk to an attorney and let's get the laws in the state. Okay, well, I don't care. It doesn't even matter. This is my position. You're not getting anything. Okay, so if that's the answer, you have to end the conversation because that's a crazy conversation. It just is. It holds no value. You know, once you start divorce, there are laws that kick in and the emotions of both spouses don't matter. The law matters. And that's where you have to go all the time. You must know the law. Let's talk about other assets. Let's talk about the pension. You know, this pension was mine for a long time. I'm the only one that contributed to it. And this is my largest asset. This is what I have to live on. And so, no, I don't want to divide it. Okay, I understand that. Everybody understands that. But pensions are assets. Pensions are there to be divided. You must ask an attorney. I sound like a broken record, but this is where it sits. You must ask an attorney for clarity about the laws in your state for division of pension. But I want you to think about this. If you're the one that has the pension and you're the one that doesn't want to divide it, think about this. The pension was there to provide for your futures as a married couple. And everybody counted on that. Sometimes the scenario is your pension was invested in far more heavily than the other pension because your pension provided a greater rate of return. And now you're getting divorced. You have to accommodate your spouse. It's just human. You have to accommodate. Now, what if you're the one that doesn't want the divorce? You were cheated on. And now you're still being asked to divide the pension. It's a horrible feeling. It's an absolutely horrible feeling. And I get it. So there's a lot of conversation about the pension. So what do you do in that case? You look to see if there's another asset that you can give more than half to your spouse if it equals the division of the pension. You start playing with other assets if you have them. If there's a house, which would be your saving grace, a lot of my clients give up their equity in the house if it matches their spouse's equity in the pension. I know it's an equal trade-off, but it feels better to people. But to not want to divide the pension at all, I get it if you don't want the divorce and you were asked for the divorce. Look to see where you can accommodate in a different way. But if you both decided that the divorce was not, that the marriage was not right going forward, you just have to bite the bullet and look how to make the most equitable division of assets that you can. And unfortunately, your pension's going to be one of them. Do the best you can. If you're the one being told, I don't want to divide the pension, don't run in fear mode, run to an attorney. You will get your answers, and then you start negotiating. The other two things that come into the division of assets are, well, actually division of asset and debt. The other asset division would be financial investments and bank accounts. So the misconception with bank accounts and other investments are, well, only my name is on it, especially the bank accounts. Only my name is on the bank accounts, so it's separate property. Again, you have to know the laws of your state. In California, on the date of separation, all monies from what you earned for your income, for your living, if they're put in bank accounts, regardless of whose name's on the accounts, community property dollars, division. This is how important it is to level the emotional playing field with actual information. And I'm just scraping the surface with you. My greater point in all of this is, attorneys are your best friends. Same thing goes with debt, by the way. If you only have your own names on credit cards, but you've used those cards for family expenses, you have to look at dividing that debt. Now, if it was done for things that weren't necessary or individual things, if you're a shopaholic, like you could be my best friend if you are, but if you're a shopaholic, maybe not make your spouse indebted to paying half of your debt. Maybe that would be a cool thing to do. And just look at the family expenses to divide. You have to be human too. You have to really be empathetic. You have to be realistic and practical. Don't try and screw each other with the law either. Very uncool to do. Step up, accept your responsibilities for how you've spent money. But if you spent money against the health and welfare of the community, of the marriage, gambling, drugs, adultery, your spouse is probably not going to be expected to take on half that debt. Adverse to the health and welfare of the community, and probably the reason why you're getting divorced. So there's logic in this as well. There's law and there's logic. And lastly, seeing an attorney is being disloyal. No, I don't want my spouse to know I saw an attorney. Or no, we decided we weren't going to see an attorney. That was a pact we made. Okay, well, it was a bad pact. You have to see attorneys. You can't have your mediator, me, or somebody filing for you, a document preparation company. They are not your go-to people for the law. We all expect you to get informed before you come here. And then we can really do what we have to do for you to mediate your settlement agreement, because you are informed. And it's an equal playing field. And you're more than likely less emotional because you know the law. Maybe you don't like the law, but you know the law. So you're not being disloyal. You're actually being smart. And you're doing the best for yourselves and for each other when you know the law. Now, if you're not going to an attorney because you really feel the law is going to put you in a disadvantageous situation, I get it. You still have to learn. Go on Google then. Google has everything, every law known to mankind. Type in what you want to learn and then put the state that you live in the Google search bar, and then you'll start learning the law. But you have to educate yourselves. So that's my tips for you today, so that you can overcome the divorce misconceptions that have a whole bunch of fear embodied in them. I want to get the fear out of you. It's fearful enough going forward on your own, and how are you going to manage financially? But at least we can get rid of some of these things that have no logic, no law based in them, so that you can be at least as focused as possible on making really good decisions. So once again, I thank you for joining me on Constructive Uncoupling, the podcast devoted to amicable divorces. I'm Judy Weigel, your host. The company I own is Divorce Resource Incorporated. Divorce Resource Incorporated in Los Angeles. If you would like to talk to me about your divorce, please call. Go to my website, divorceresourceinc.com, divorceresourceinc.com, or email me, Judy, J-U-D-Y, at constructiveuncoupling.com. Judy, at constructiveuncoupling.com, if you want me to address a topic that I haven't thus far. But thank you so much, and we'll talk to you next week.